You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Thursday, May 14, 2026. Keep pushing. Venezuela's crude oil terminals need minor fixes, major overhauls to boost exports. Published by Lisa Scheidler. A lot of work must be done to revive Venezuela's crude oil industry, which has suffered from years of poor management and underinvestment. One of the biggest priorities is to improve and expand its export capacity, which will require repairs and upgrades to export terminals while also fixing problems around unreliable power supply and tanker congestion. Exports have rebounded sharply in early 2026 after collapsing late last year, but much more could happen. In today's RBN blog, we'll outline the additional steps that could be completed to improve Venezuela's facilities and boost export volumes. Venezuela has been a frequent topic in the RBN blogosphere since the start of the year, when U.S. forces deposed and arrested President Nicolas Maduro. In Take Me Money and Run Venezuela, we recapped how the country went from a major global supplier to producing less than 1 million barrels per day today, roughly one quarter of its former output. We then dug into Venezuela's crude slate and Orinoco flow, noting that most reserves lie in the 21,000-square-mile Orinoco belt and are extra heavy, making the oil difficult and costly to move and refine. In When Love Comes to Town, we compared Venezuelan and Canadian heavy crudes and why they're attractive to U.S. Gulf Coast refiners. In Round and Round, which previewed our first drill down report of 2026, which is available here, we laid out the practical steps Venezuela would need to take to boost crude production. Most recently, the show goes on detailed the country's refining sector. Upgrade. You examine the important role the country's crude upgraders figure to play in any plan to boost domestic production and increase exports, while Don't You Forget About Me looked at the country's expansive natural gas reserves. Most Venezuelan crude oil production is low API, high sulfur crude, coming from the previously noted Orinoco belt. Because the crude is so dense and viscous, it needs to be blended with a diluent, typically condensate or natural gasoline, or upgraded to a lighter synthetic crude oil, SCO, before it can be transported easily, similar to crude produced in the Canadian oil sands. Exports of crude and refined products have rebounded sharply this year after collapsing late last year. Shipments bottomed out near 100,000 barrels per day in early January following a steep December decline, then recovered to roughly 500 to 550,000 barrels per day by late January. After holding relatively flat through February, exports climbed to around 1.1 million barrels per day in March, the highest level in about 6 months, before briefly spiking to around 1.4 million barrels per day in early April. This rebound reflects a mix of policy and market shifts. The Trump administration replaced sanctions with a looser framework that allows more structured sales, opening the door for new buyers. Crude oil returned to the U.S. market and Indian refiners have stepped in as key customers, taking barrels that previously moved largely to China. Note: Venezuelan crude exports to the U.S. jumped to 588,000 barrels per day in the week ended May 8, the highest since 2019. At the same time, producers like Chevron have ramped up activity and drawn down inventories that built up during the late 2025 disruptions. One of Venezuela's biggest constraints is on the logistics side. Its export capacity is concentrated at a handful of terminals, all of which need repairs or upgrades, or both, with the bulk of shipments moving through a single major hub. The Jose Terminal in eastern Venezuela is the country's primary crude export hub, handling 70% to 90% of total shipments. It is the country's main deepwater outlet and one of the only terminals capable of loading very large crude carriers, VLCCs, which can carry up to 2 million barrels. It is supported by multiple berths and offshore single-point moorings, SPMs, tied to the upgrading complex that handles crude from the Orinoco belt. The complex includes extensive storage, blending and upgrading infrastructure and is the backbone of Venezuela's export system. Its nameplate capacity is theoretically up to 2 million barrels per day, though historical operations have been closer to 1.4 million barrels per day and recently have ranged from 500 to 800,000 barrels per day due to degraded infrastructure and operational bottlenecks. Key constraints include damaged loading arms and berths, unreliable power supply, limited usable storage, blending constraints tied to diluent availability, and persistent tanker congestion. Historically, exports leaned toward Aframax and Suezmax cargoes moving to the U.S. Gulf Coast and Caribbean hubs, with some offshore reloading and blending. More recently, VLCC liftings have picked up again amid tighter tanker availability and shifting trade flows. The Western system, centered around Lake Maracaibo, operates as a self-contained export network that includes the Puerto Miranda, La Salina, and Bajo Grande terminals. Oil produced in and around the lake moves via short pipelines to these lakeside terminals, where it's loaded onto tankers within the lake itself. From there, vessels travel along a dredged channel out to the Caribbean. Because the system is shallow draft, meaning the water depth is limited, it can't accommodate the largest tankers, like VLCCs. As a result, exports are mostly handled by Aframax vessels capable of loading up to about 600,000 barrels, dredged completely. To move larger volumes, operators rely on a couple of workarounds. Tankers may load only partially so they don't sit too deep in the water, then top off elsewhere, outside the lake, or cargoes may be transferred onto larger vessels via offshore ship-to-ship, STS, operations, much like VLCCs do when exporting crude from the U.S. Gulf Coast. These extra steps add time, cost, and logistical complexity, but they allow the system to function despite its depth constraints. The bigger issue is that the system is old and constrained. It might be able to handle 300 to 600,000 barrels per day, but is operating at closer to 200 to 300,000 barrels per day. Sedimentation in the channel, inconsistent dredging, corroded pipelines, unreliable power supply, and degraded loading infrastructure are persistent issues here. When more barrels are pushed through, spills and mechanical failures tend to spike, forcing parts of the system offline or requiring them to operate at reduced rates. In addition, some refinery-linked terminals serve as secondary export outlets. They are not primary crude export hubs, but support exports when refinery and logistics allow. The Amue/Punta Carden terminals are located within the Paraguana refining complex along the northwest coast and function more like refinery-linked marine outlets than standalone export hubs. Crude flows in by pipeline from western fields like Lake Maracaibo, moves through tank farms and blending systems, and then out through short lines to the docks. What gets loaded is mostly refined products and some lighter crude or fuel oil, typically on product tankers or Aframax-class ships. While the infrastructure can handle larger vessels, underutilization at the refinery means they rarely call in practice. The challenge here is that the setup is tied directly to refinery performance, which is the constraint. The complex has massive nameplate capacity but has been running at a fraction of that due to outages, maintenance issues, and feedstock shortages. As a result, the terminals are underutilized and operate more as regional balancing points than major export drivers. The Guaraguao terminal, a refining/export node at Puerto La Cruz in the east, gets its crude oil through a pipeline from the eastern fields into the Puerto La Cruz refinery, which then works its way through the refinery's tank farms to the docks. Once barrels are run and turned into products, or held as crude, they flow out to the jetties, where they're loaded onto product tankers and Aframax-class ships, with the occasional Suezmax. Next, let's discuss the potential short, medium, and long-term fixes for Venezuela's export facilities. Short-term, less than a year, the focus is on quick wins that could unlock an additional 200 to 400,000 barrels per day of exports by clearing bottlenecks at the docks. That means basic but high-impact repairs at Jose, such as loading arms, pumps, valves, and power issues, and bringing idle berths back online, since those failures are a known constraint and the fastest path to roughly 100 to 300,000 barrels per day of additional exports. A second near-term priority is reducing tanker delays and congestion by tightening execution, which could boost exports by around 100,000 barrels per day. That includes streamlining cargo scheduling and fixing contract and payment bottlenecks that literally keep ships at anchor. It's not uncommon for cargoes to miss their loading window because of logistics and paperwork, not a lack of crude. Improving power reliability at key export terminals and pump stations is also essential. Temporary generation could help prevent blackouts that shut down operations. And when storage and berth space are tight, more ship-to-ship transfers, floating storage and use of nearby Caribbean islands as staging hubs would all help keep barrels moving. Medium term, 6 months to 3 years, the focus is on restoring capacity by clearing the physical bottlenecks that are holding back export facilities. This means a more serious rehabilitation of the export terminals, especially Jose. This includes replacing corroded tanks, rebuilding berths, modernizing pumping and metering systems, restoring full multi-berth operations, and rebuilding storage by repairing unusable tanks and expanding crude and diluent capacity so storage issues stop forcing shut-ins. In addition, continued investment in the electric grid will be needed to ensure reliable power. While short-term steps can materially improve industrial power availability, a roughly 3-year timeframe is reasonable to restore functional reliability to most crude export facilities, largely through a combination of grid improvements and dedicated on-site or localized generation. The next step is the midstream plumbing and the diluent system that feeds it. Pipeline reliability has to move back toward nameplate capacity by tackling corrosion, leaks and pump failures, and restoring dependable flow from the Orinoco belt to coastal terminals, while at the same time building out more robust diluent handling and blending. This means dedicated import and blending infrastructure, better tankage and cleaner routing so heavy oil blending does not become a bottleneck at the docks. Long term, 3 to 10 plus years, the focus on rebuilding Venezuela's export facilities means turning a fragile system into a more diversified and resilient network, with strategies for each major location, which would likely require tens of billions of dollars of external investment. That involves modernizing hubs like Jose and Lake Maracaibo while also adding new offshore and Caribbean-facing options so exports are no longer limited to one or two aging terminals. At Jose in the Eastern Corridor, the long-term strategy is to rebuild a true integrated export platform. This means fully modern storage and blending hubs tied to upgraders and blending projects, deepwater offshore loading, and dedicated, reliable power and utilities that keep terminals and upgraders running regardless of broader grid problems. That's where most incremental heavy oil barrels will move, so capital goes to replacing degraded tanks and pipelines, installing modern metering and control systems, and building out offshore loading that reduces reliance on shallow docks and constant lightering. In the western system around Lake Maracaibo, the long-term strategy should prioritize critical repairs at a few viable lakeside terminals. The repairs need to address the worst corrosion and storage issues, although a decision must be made about whether continued dredging and maintenance are sufficient to justify maintaining a modest regional export role versus shifting more volume east over time. In addition, for these changes to occur, there must be additional infrastructure in areas surrounding key terminals, repairs to the national electrical system, and the return of critical service providers, including tugs and other marine and logistical support needed for terminals and navigational zones to function reliably. At the same time, Venezuela remains an exceedingly difficult environment in which to operate, even as the oil and gas sector rapidly reopens following this year's political shakeup. International companies like Chevron and Shell are negotiating new oil and gas projects to boost production and revive exports, while service firms such as Halliburton are preparing to resume operations, signaling a broader industry re-entry. But it's essential that companies and people feel safe and comfortable returning to Venezuela. Keep Pushin' was written by Kevin Cronin and appears as the first song on side 2 of REO Speedwagon's 6th studio album, REO. The song is about persevering through struggles and heartbreak, breaking through to a better life. Released as a single in June 1976, it failed to reach the Billboard singles chart. Personnel on the record were Kevin Cronin, vocals, rhythm guitar, Gary Richrath, lead guitar, backing vocals, Greg Philbin bass, Neil Dowdy, keyboards, and Alan Gretzer, drums. The album, REO, was recorded in January 1976 at Criteria Studios in Miami and produced by John Stronach. It marked Kevin Cronin's return after a four-year absence and was the last album for bassist Greg Philbin, who was replaced by Bruce Hall. The album was released in June 1976 and went to number 159 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. One single was released from the LP. REO Speedwagon, also known as REO, was an American rock band formed in Champaign, Illinois, in 1967 with drummer Alan Gretzer and keyboardist Neil Dowdy. The band was named after the REO Speedwagon truck made by Ransom Eli Olds, REO, in Lansing, Michigan. The band got its start playing around the campus of the University of Illinois in 1967. Their manager was a student, Irv Azoff, who would later manage the Eagles and become the head of MCA Records. Their debut album, REO Speedwagon, was released by Epic Records in October 1971. They released 16 studio albums, 10 live albums, 22 compilation albums and 34 singles and have sold over 40 million records worldwide. 26 members have passed through the band since its formation. Guitarist Gary Richrath died in Bloomington, Illinois, in September 2015 at 65. Bassist Greg Philbin died in Fort Myers, Florida, in October 2022 at 75. The band officially retired the name at the end of 2024. Kevin Cronin still tours as the Kevin Cronin Band, playing sets of REO songs.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.